Good morning. I'm Ann Schindler, and this is First Coast Connect. Today, a group of families looks towards peace and reconciliation at a most difficult time. We talk to a group representing the bereaved on both sides of the Israeli and Palestinian conflict. Later in the program, a local children's author channels her struggles with obesity into books aimed at raising confident kids. And stick around, at the end of today's program, we'll give away two tickets to classical, jazz, soul, and funk performer Brandi Younger. She performs live on the WJCT soundstage tonight. But first, we're tackling a particularly difficult topic this Thursday, a conflict dating back a century that continues to poison and imperil generations of Israelis and Palestinians. I'm joined now by members of the American Friends of the Parents Circle Families Forum, a group that unites families on both sides of the conflict through their shared grief. Christopher Beachy is the group's development and communications manager, and he joins us here in studio. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
We're also welcoming Mohammed and Yuval, both of whom we're going to identify just by first names only, and both have lost an immediate family member in the conflict, one Palestinian and one Israeli. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Good morning, Anne.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And if you want to join the conversation, you are welcome to. You can call us at 904-549-2937. You can also email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. You can reach out on social media, and my guests have assured me that they're up for hard questions. So feel free to call in with your questions or comments. Christopher Beachy, your organization is in town to hold some events. Some are open, some are not, but what is the goal of these events? It's kind of a dialogue that you're having with the community.
That's correct. So on Saturday is the first public event that we're having. It's going to be at St. John's Cathedral. It's a dialogue meeting featuring these two gentlemen. So essentially, Yuval and Mohammed will share their stories, and then we will open it up to questions and answers from members of the community.
What is the goal of an event like this?
Yuval, what would you say? Yuval and Mohammed, what would you say the goal of this event is?
Yeah. First of all, it's an introduction to our work at Palestine and Israel, working in the ground with the people. And it's also, we saw, because we are connected with American Friends at the Baron Circle, we saw how is big the gap between pro-Palestinian and pro-Israelis here. And we are giving them examples that if we, me and Yuval, who lost our family members, can sit and talk, I think they can also sit and talk.
I think, as Mohammed said, our main goal is to demonstrate that taking sides is not going to take us anywhere, not there and not here in the United States, where people take sides because they really believe one side is right and the other is wrong. And we said both sides are victims, and we need support to get together, to get our leaders to sit together and end this conflict that is, as you said, 100 years old, and is not going to, and nobody's going to go anywhere. No nation is going to disappear. We are doomed to live there together in the Holy Land. And here and everywhere else, people need to get together, Jews and Muslims and other faith as well, to help us bring our leaders to sit together and end this conflict for the benefit of the residents of our region and all over the world.
Yuval, if you're comfortable, tell us about your own experience with loss in this conflict.
Well, I lost my father in the war of 67. I was 8 years old. It was many years ago. It didn't convert me into a peace activist at the time. I was just, you know, full of hate and rage and fear of Arabs, and I really thought that I'm going to continue the war with them through, you know, becoming a military. But many years gone by, and I understood that this is not as simple as it is, and we must sit together and this conflict for the sake of my children and grandchildren.
And is it my understanding correctly that it was your mother who sort of steered you into a group that was talking about reconciliation, or how did you come to?
No, actually, it was my kids.
Oh,
they not drive me into it. They just started to go to the army, because, you know, mandatory service in Israel. And I understood what they're doing there. And that rose some questions for me, like, what am I doing as a citizen to take some responsibility of the future of this country? So that was at the age of 50 where I decided to become activist.
And was it a specific moment where your heart and mind changed, or was it sort of an evolution?
It was an evolution, but the tipping point, the point that I really made my mind is, again, as I told you, my kid, my oldest son, started to come back to vacations from the army, and I understood that the stories we've been told are completely false, and that we are not really defending the country by keeping the territories, but really occupying Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And that our kids go to army to maintain this occupation. It's true that we need to defend our country, but this is not the way. The best way to defend Israel is to make peace.
Mohammed, if you are comfortable, tell us about your own family circumstance and how you came to this group.
Yeah. First of all, my mother directed me to...
It was your mother.
Yeah. Yeah, my mother directed me to the Parents Circle because she works with women, and part of the Parents Circle women group, they have activities for women. And it's a long story, but Ruby Damlin, the international spokeswoman for the Parents Circle, was in our house 2016. And this was my first time to meet Israelis, civilians, Israelis, not in the military.
Like it was a meeting your mother was hosting of the Parents Circle?
Yes. Yes, she was hosting a dialogue meeting, like what we will do here. And it was the first time for me to meet Israelis. I said, hi, I entered my room. It's not a big deal. Then I asked my mother why there is Israelis in our house. She told me this is a dialogue meeting. She talked about her son, and I talked about my son. And it was a gather of bereaved families from our neighborhoods. And a lot of women talked about their loss, and they cried together. So I told her, is that kind of group therapy that you do? You talk about your grieving and cry together. In a sarcastic way, she told me, no, this is the Parents Circle. They have other projects. They have the parallel narrative, which is Palestinians and Israelis talking about their narrative and how they are different in every aspect. And they discuss it in a project of 2 months meeting in weekends. And you should go. And I went. 2 weeks later, I was in the meeting.
Were you resistant to going?
Yes.
Talk about that. I mean, tell us why you would have gone to the meeting in the first place. What was the loss that you suffered?
Yes. First of all, I lost my brother in 2002. I was 14 and he was 16. He got shot from an Israeli tank, and they prevented ambulances and everyone from helping him. 12 people got injured, 10 school kids and 2 journalists from Associated Press. And this event led me to study nursing 4 years later.
So he was injured by a soldier and then nobody could help him?
Yeah, it's a tank, Israeli tank.
Okay. Yeah. And others were injured, including
yes, the school kids... I tried to help him, and they start to shoot around his body, so no can come around him, and the tanks start to do circle around his body. It was a big and it's a traumatizing event, not for my family, but also for the neighborhood, because many school kids witnessed this event, and it was scare for them. And so my interaction with Israelis was always in the checkpoints and in the military jeeps and in the tanks. My mother told me that you should go to this parallel narrative project. I said yes, this kind of yes that you say to your parents to
get them off your back.
Yeah. So I said yes. And during these 2 weeks, I looked on Google on the website and what they are doing. I felt a lot of curiosity because they are hugging each other and doing things like there's nothing happening in this world, you know. Like there's no occupation, no one getting killed every day. So I was curious what they are doing. But, you know, it's 90% forced and 10% curiosity. I went to the meeting because my mother insisted, and Palestinian mother are so strong that they make you do things.
You can't say no to mom.
Yeah.
And so you went to that meeting and you went reluctantly, but curiosity, you know, carried you a little bit of the way. How long did it take, you know, for the message of that group to resonate with you, or in some way push back the anger that you were feeling over your brother's death?
Yeah, the anger I feel every day when I cross checkpoints. Yeah, we always feel angry at checkpoints because, you know, it's kids at checkpoints and they control your life. Like I was with my fiancée going to Bethlehem, to Beit Jala, to our office to introduce her to my colleagues in the Palestinian office. And we spent 4 hours at the checkpoint. And it was from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Then eventually I drove back to our city, Jenin. And I called the office and told them we can do it. And it was the last. This was last month, and till now I checked the checkpoint. It's always busy, so I didn't even take a risk to do it again.
So you went, waited, and then turned around and went back.
Yeah.
Without crossing.
No, without the crossing, because it will take another 2 hours to Beit Jala. Then there's another checkpoint, and maybe it will be closed. You don't know. So. It was sunny and exhausting. So the first meeting I met Israelis face to face was in the parallel project, parallel narrative. And it starts with introducing each other. Everyone introduces himself. It's a circle. And they start to introduce themselves. And one of the participants said that he served in the Israeli army in 2005. So for me, I couldn't handle this. I left the circle. I felt shivering. I was sweating, shivering. My hands were shivering, and I was angry, flushed. I went to restroom to wash my face and looked in the mirror and said, why I'm doing this? Why I'm meeting these people that occupying us? And they go to the army that killing my brother. And maybe this guy killed my brother. I don't know. No one knows who killed my brother. No one ever will know. The Palestinian facilitator came and told me, you know, that they are all in the army and it's obligatory before you're coming. Why you left? I told him I can't dare to be in the same room with this guy because he said that he is in the army. And I want to leave, and I was in Beit Jala, which is 3 hours. You know, I noticed that 3 hours drive here is nothing, but it's a big deal in West Bank. So 3 hours drive, and he told me I will bring you a taxi, but please come to the next activity. They have a well-organized activities that start with introduction, then to talk more about your personal story. Then you know the other person.
You kind of get to know them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So after these activities, eventually I know that he is kind, generous, and he's pro-peace, and he against occupation, and against what was happening back then. And this was my breakthrough, that I know that there is a human in the other side. There's a human beings.
Yuval, I want to ask you about the, the conscription of Israelis into the army, into the Israeli Defense Force. How does that, as Muhammad alludes to, I mean, when you are encountering soldiers, that experience is very negative for someone like Muhammad. And yet people are really required to do that service, which seems like it might be sort of a disservice in the interest of and non-militant, armed future?
Well, it's different when you look at it from Israeli perspective. Israel was formed and existed in many ways in a hostile area and had to defend itself for many, many years. So being a being in the army is a privilege. It's not just because you are, a militant person. It's part of being an Israeli. So all the boys and girls after high school, they have to go to the army and make this their military service. And it's part of being part of the culture. It's not for killing Palestinians. It's not for attacking them. It's for really the defending of your state. It's like serving your state. I think it's the problem is Palestinians don't have this kind of service. So emotions that are related to nation and how to serve your nations often find their ways to different outlets. And I had a 6-year service. My kids all went to the service. And it doesn't matter that you can be pro-peace and still defend your country. But as I said, the leadership of the country need to take this into a different direction, not using the force as a way to continue the occupation, but using its mind to sit down and end the conflict. And then the army will have to go down to its basic purposes to just defend the state.
We've got a call. Don Juan from Jacksonville. Good morning. Welcome to First Coast Connect.
Hello.
Go ahead, Don.
Oh, hi. Good morning, everyone. My question is, I wanted to get maybe your thoughts about what you hear from the pro-Israel crowd, particularly mostly the conservatives, who state that Palestinians support Hamas, and that's why they are being targeted overall. And this is a narrative that goes through, and they base it on when Hamas was elected into office back in the early 2000s. I wanted to get your thoughts about if this is accurate or not. And at the same time, the other argument about Hamas uses Palestinians to get their goals, and they don't care if they get killed, even if they're on their own people.
Would one of you care to take that question?
Yeah.
Mohammed? Okay.
Yeah. He said, bro, Israel said about Hamas. I forget the question.
Maybe I'll start. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think as much as I dislike Hamas, Hamas is the fruit of the prolonged conflict and the fact that there's no solution for Palestinians. So so this is how they grow, the Hamas. It doesn't just come up out of nowhere. And the way to fight Hamas is to just end the conflict. Hamas only feeds on the frustration and the despair of the Palestinians in Gaza. And the fact that the Palestinian Authority could not make an agreement is not just because they're weak, it's just because they didn't have a partner in Israel to continue the Oslo process. So with this frustration and despair, that's a great soil to grow weeds like Hamas. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying Hamas is good. I'm just saying it has a consequence. It has a cause that made this possible.
Christopher, I want to ask you, because this is obviously a long-standing and really intractable seeming problem, but I imagine the work that you do and that all of you do has gotten a lot more difficult since October 7th. How has that changed your approach to trying to engage in a conversation about reconciliation and peace?
That's a really great question. Yeah, it has become enormously difficult since October 7th. As my colleagues in the parent circle often like to say, that the conflict has been wholesale imported into the United States, such that you have, and this is, a huge impetus behind why we're here in the U.S. and doing these types of events, is because our call is to be not pro-Israeli, not pro-Palestinian, but to be part of the solution. And so that, I feel like, always informs it. And that's why, before we came on air today, we had said, like, don't pull any punches when it comes to the hard questions, because we're okay with that, because that's not something that we're afraid of. that, yeah, we can, it's the very nature of this organization is such that it demonstrates that peace is possible, that if two people like Yuval and Mohammed can stand on a stage together, it demonstrates that that peace is possible and that that reconciliation is possible. So why would we be afraid of hard questions from people?
But even among your staunch membership, you know, who have put up with a lot of loss and a lot to overcome, has it gotten more difficult for them? Have you had attrition because of the violence and the extreme loss of life?
There was a lot of really hard conversations in the time immediately after October 7. Yuval, if you want to talk more about that.
Yeah, just the fact that we're talking about peace doesn't say it's easy.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult. It's always difficult, and it became even harder after October 7th. I think that the first day that the first Saturday that the event started, we understood that we are going to face a really, really hard time now, mainly for Palestinians. So we immediately gathered with the team. In the organization, we have a team of Israelis and Palestinians that manage the operation, about 20 people. We gathered them together the same day online. And we said, no matter what's going to happen, we're going to stick together, because this is the only place where Israelis and Palestinians can still talk, no matter how hard it is. And it is. It's been really, really hard 5 months for us, at the team, and with our membership. But we knew that we have no other choice.
Do you have any strategies when you're encountering the news and trying to have those dialogues?
We're trying to focus on what we have to do, what we can do, because many of the operations that we had so far became impossible to exercise because the borders are closed and there's much less willingness to hear our story now, both in Palestine and Israel. So we're looking for what can be done in these times, and it's mainly online. So we do a lot of online activity, and we still continue. Our message now is holding on to humanity. And this is the message that always goes through. And we discovered that both in Israel and Palestine, people really are, there are still a lot of people that are really eager to hear what we have to say. Although everybody became really nationalist and, pro one side, we still stick to the message that both sides are victims and we must end this conflict for the benefit of Israelis and Palestinians. No matter how high was the cost, we paid a lot of cost, Israelis and Palestinians. It's not by prolonging this war that it's going to solve anything. It's by ending it and sitting down and not just, returning the hostages and releasing the prisoners. It's ending the conflict once and for all.
Chris alluded to the fact that this is a conflict that has been imported wholesale to the United States. And we actually have a question about that from Mike on Facebook. Because our own city council here in Jacksonville has passed a resolution in support of Israel, almost unanimously passed, and the one vote against it was someone whose background is, from the Palestinian area. That's, where his family originates. But Mike on Facebook says, council member Rory Diamond has called those who come to city council meetings upset about civilian deaths, terrorist apologists, and anti-Semites. Can you talk about how unhelpful such comments are?
It is, because the truth is that, as I said, both are victims. And Israelis kill Palestinians now. Palestinians try to kill Israelis now. And it's not taking anywhere. And I know I'm an Israeli, okay? I want everybody to support Israel. But I think the best support for Israel now is to push its leaders towards ending this war and ending the conflict. That's the best support. That's the best support that Israel can get from anybody anywhere in the world.
Mohammed, what do you think about somebody at the local level in Florida, Jacksonville, Florida, weighing in on the conflict like this? Is that seem appropriate or not? Does it matter to people in a conflict so far away?
Yeah. The first person I met in Jacksonville was the taxi driver, and he was from South Sudan. And the same problem that they have in South Sudan, that people don't know what's happening there. So they have you know, mainstream media, and they have one direction from Sudan. So they hear from officials from Sudan. This is before their independence. And it's like this now. It's for us. No one hears us. No one knows exactly what's happening to us. You know, if I want to talk the small things that's happening, like the event in the checkpoints, it's traumatizing that, you know, it's leave you speechless for days, you know. It affects you in every aspect, that you don't have freedom, you don't have anything to do, and you can't change it. And this despair leads people to be, Hamas leads people to be more radical. And I think the most important thing that people should know, that there is a human on the other side. And this is the essence of our work, that we focus on the human side. We focus on this in every activity. We have summer camp for Palestinian and Israeli kids. And the kids, believe me, they have more human values than adults. Mm-hmm. They are not affected with politics. They're not affected with what adults have. They are pure and they are friendly, and they become friends on the first day, on the second day, Palestinian and Israelis. And one of the activities is putting yourself on other shoes. And this is one of the ways that the kids understand what the feeling of the other side is.
So we're talking with members of the American Friends of the Parents Circle Families Forum. It's a group that unites families on both sides of the conflict through shared grief. We have a message from Stacy on Facebook. She says, thank you for bringing the personal stories of these men to us. It's powerful and has helped me understand the conflict better. I support a peaceful two-state solution, and I hope to see it in my lifetime. We also have a question from Ed on Facebook. He says, there are 70 majority Muslim countries and 22 Arab nations in the world, including Egypt, that borders Gaza. Why are none of them accepting any refugees from Gaza, not even the women and children?
It's a good question. Why they should? Why they should accept? Why, refugees?
Why should this have to be?
Yeah.
Why should this have to be the?
Why
the
should
solution?
Refugees? I am a refugee. I am from Jaffa, and in 48, my grandfather ran from Jaffa in the Nakba in 48 to Jenin, and most of Gazans are refugees. So, it's for them. I know the feeling that I rather prefer to die, not to be a refugee again. Mm-hmm. Being a refugee is not something good. Like it's not only trauma, it's not only memories, it's also that you will, it's not a stigma, but it's nearly a stigma. You will be a refugee whenever you do, whenever you have, whatever level you will be in the society, you will stay a refugee. And I don't, people like who sense this and taste this in their life, they will never do it again. And I feel the people in Gaza that they can't do this. Maybe some of them will do this, but because since October 7th, we feel that they will kick us to Jordan, mm-hmm, in West Bank. And most of the people in our neighborhood said, we will not go, we will die here. Mm.
Having been displaced, not wanting to be displaced again and live permanently as a refugee, Yuval.
I think we as Jews, we've been refugees for 2,000 years. We of all nations should know that any nation should have, any people should have the right to live on their land. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to transfer the Palestinians outside of Palestine. They will always want to go back there. So the only solution is to let them live there in their own state, side by side to Israel.
Christopher, there is an event that involves both of these gentlemen, as you said, for a conversation about moving forward in this conflict. How can people participate if they want to join that?
Sure. So that event is this Saturday. It's called Voices from Palestine in Israel. It's going to be at St. John's Cathedral. Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And if people want to register to be involved, they can go to jackscathedral.org/dialogue.
Mm-hmm. I just have a question for both of you gentlemen before we wrap up. But is the belief of the group that reconciliation has to come before a sustainable peace? I mean, is that something that comes with peace? Is there a first and second?
I think it's a really, really interesting question because it's different for Israelis and Palestinians, I think. I think Israelis would like to see reconciliation as a path to peace, whereas Palestinians would like to see first a solution and only then start the reconciliation. It's a cultural thing, I think. I think Israelis are afraid that if they start a process and there's no conciliation, this process is going to lead to even more conflict. But I think we should sit together and find a way to compromise between these two approaches.
You agree, Mohammed, that that's kind of a different approach for
yes,
both?
Yes, because I have summer camp kids. We have summer camp continuation program meeting monthly, and I have kids aged 15 to 18, Palestinian kids, and I ask them what their definition of peace. What is a peace in your thoughts, and what you think about peace? And most of the answers were, most of them wrote sentence, a paragraph, but in every sentence and the paragraph they said freedom of movement, and it's a human essential right, but for them it's what's called peace. So for Palestinian, freedom first, then peace, because you can't talk about peace without freedom.
Well, I've been talking with Christopher Beachy, Development and Communications Manager at American Friends of the Parents Circle. Also, Mohammed and Yuval, members who are sharing their personal stories of loss with the larger community. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today.
Thank you, Anne.
Thank you, Anne.
Thanks. Up next, we talk to a mother-daughter author team about their shared love of children's literature. Welcome back. In a world of gadgets and screens, it's easy for kids to overlook the value of reading and the importance of nurturing themselves. But Jacksonville authors Patika Tave and her daughter, Zandria Bastian, are a mission to change that right now. Both believe in books that focus on positivity, encouraging kids to embrace and love their true selves. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much. We're happy to be here.
Thanks for being here. Patika, you are a longtime educator here in Duval County. When and why did you decide to start writing children's books?
Well, it goes back to me struggling as a child. When I was young, I've always been heavy and I've always been tall. I was actually 6 feet and 300 pounds in the eighth grade. And so writing was my outlet. I have journals from 10, 20 years ago where I expressed myself because I had to have a way to share my feelings and thoughts. And because I struggled so much with self-esteem and who I was as a person, even though I had really great grades and a strong family support system, I was hurting inside. And so fast forward to when I found out I was having my daughter, I wanted to make sure that she did not struggle the way that I did. And so I actually wrote poems to her. And when someone read those poems, they said, "You must make this a children's book." And that's what I did.
And so that was your first book, which was?
Beautiful As You Are.
Okay. And what is the message of those poems?
The poem's message is just to love yourself unapologetically, inside and out, just the way you are. Mm-hmm. No matter how tall or small, big or thin you are, just know that you are who you are, and that's good enough.
Zandria, I mean, that sounds like a pretty cool message for a mom to convey. Is that something that you felt growing up from her?
Oh, of course. My mom, she's always showed me that I am just perfect, just the way that I am, and that there's always room to improve, but we are all made how we're supposed to be, and that we just to celebrate ourselves and our personality.
Mm-hmm. And Patika, I saw that one of the things that you recommend and advocate is reading to children in utero, basically. Yeah. What do you think is the value of that? Did you do that? And what kind of books did you read at that time?
Absolutely. That is so important. So when you take my years as an educator, right now I'm an actual reading coach here in Duval County, and you can tell the children that have been exposed to print-rich homes, that have been exposed to high-level vocabulary and people actually just talking to them. I know back in the day we do the gaga goo-goo stuff. We don't do that anymore. And one of those things I was very adamant about is when my children were young, I talked to them like they were adults. Hi, get up. We're going to change your diaper, okay? Be still. And I wanted to make sure that they understood language, and reading to them helps them hear those articulation of words, hear the person that's going to take care of them, and understand different emotions and things of that nature. Because typically when you read, you have animated voices and you try to make it come alive. And that gives that child not only a lesson in, you know, having that phonemic awareness being taught to them, but also just getting a love of reading.
Mm-hmm. Andrea, what do you remember from being in the womb, hearing those books?
Well, I'm not very sure, but I know it has helped to shape me to be so well in tuned to vocabulary and all that stuff. So it's definitely helped.
Mm-hmm. So you wrote your first book how many years ago?
I wrote it in 2000. Well, we published it in 2019, the book, but the words were written back in 2009.
Okay. And since then, you've gotten at least two more books published.
Correct. So we have Brilliant As You Are, which is an ode to young boys to teach them to love themselves inside and out. Because originally, like I said, the poem was to my daughter, Beautiful As You Are. And when people read it, they're like, you have to do one for boys. And so I did that. And then my third children's book was Why I Love Grandpa. And it's a celebration of all the grandpas doing everything they're not supposed to do that makes children, you know, love them and appreciate them for who they are. And so I just wanted to celebrate my father, John Tabe. He passed away at the age of 80 in 2021, but he was the best example of a grandpa that I've ever seen.
Did he get to see the book?
So actually, when he was, because he was, he, we knew he wasn't going to make it very long. And so we wrote the words, and I was able to let the children read the words to him. And he was, even in those moments, he was just so tickled with joy. He was just like, wow, thank you. So he heard the words, but never got to see the completed book.
Well, what a wonderful gift.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Zandria, you've actually followed in your mom's footsteps. You have also published a book. Tell us about what the book is about. Well, have you written two books now?
No. So this is my first book.
Okay. So tell us about the book, what the inspiration was, and a little bit about what it's about.
Okay. So my book is about friendship, and it follows the journey between a girl and her cat. And it just helps to connect parents and children to talk about the relationships between friends and everything. And my inspiration, I would say, I guess, my mom, because she's always been writing. And so when I wrote this book, I was probably about 5 to 7 years of age. And so, yeah, when we've been in this author business, and she was just like, we should get this published, because she found it one day when we were cleaning. And I was like, wow, this is going to be amazing.
Oh, you were writing it kind of on your own, and she discovered that you were doing that. Wow. And what's the name of the book?
Zoe and Max, Best Friends Forever.
Okay. So are you, do you share these books with your friends? Do you talk about writing with them? Are they big readers, or are you kind of an outlier among your peers?
Well, I go to a leadership development and college preparatory school. So everyone is definitely into academics, and I can relate to other readers at my school. So I'm not necessarily an outlier, but I feel like the children's book aspect is something different.
You're just 14?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Very accomplished. And so are you working on some additional, are you writing additional things?
Not at this moment, but I am designing other products. So I have like Proud to Be Me bags, so that children families, and even adults can walk around and show that they love themselves inside and out. And I also have gift cards as well.
Do you see writing in your future, or do you just see yourself as kind of a budding entrepreneur and, you know, somebody who can coach people to feel better about themselves?
Well, right now I see myself as just an entrepreneur, but I can explore authoring in my future, and I'd love to do it because this has been such an amazing experience and I've definitely learned a lot.
How about you, Patika? What have you learned in this journey that you've taken? And how has your self-esteem improved or changed?
So I've learned quite a bit. I don't even know where to start. So my self-esteem improved. I would say when I started to realize that I am enough. And I did go through and lose 200 pounds the good old-fashioned way, exercise and dieting. And I was a Weight Watchers Inspiring Stories of the Year winner in 2006. But I also realized that you can't put your value on the number on the scale. You have to find something to celebrate every day when you look in the mirror, regardless of what that number says. So just gaining that internal confidence as an adult to know that, hey, there are always things we can all work on. But be happy with who you are, just the way you are, has been something that has really motivated me. And throughout this author journey, I've met so many wonderful people, so many people that want to see you successful. We have great markets here in town, the Riverside Arts Market, the Jacksonville Melanin Market, that really supports people and entrepreneurs. And one of the things that I like to teach folks is to just do things. Don't limit your challenges. Challenge your limits. And you never know what you could accomplish. I never would have dreamed we'd be here. And so it's a pleasure to have this opportunity to impact so many. Like I tell Zanji, I'm like, we've literally sold our book to thousands of children.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And so is there an event coming up where people can meet you and also see your books or get your books?
Absolutely. So we are so proud to have Zandria's book launch party. And we've been so blessed to be sponsored by a few Jack's Read, Authors Roundtable of Florida, and two businesses. And to bring this opportunity to children, we're going to benefit the Jacksonville Humane Society with pet food donations. And this Saturday at the Jesse. And what a fitting place. That's the old main library, the old Hayden Burns Library, if you're from Jacksonville. So to have this event to celebrate her and to help others be inspired to do more and achieve more is a blessing.
It's exciting. And so that's at Adams and Ocean, the old library.
Yes.
And are you excited about this launch?
Of course I'm excited. I'm just very grateful for this opportunity and to bring my work into the world. And I'm so thankful for my sponsors as well that have been helping and guiding us on this journey. And I'm just extremely excited.
Well, Zandria Bastian, Patika Tave, thank you so much for being here and for all the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
And stick around. We'll be right back with the Can't Miss Events in the week ahead.
Covering Florida, providing confidential assistance for all Floridians looking to explore healthcare coverage options within the federal health insurance marketplace. Help is available at 877-813-9115 or online at coveringflorida.org.
The law offices of Phillips & Hunt proudly support WJCT, personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Phillips & Hunt, committed to justice. 904-444-4444 or floridajustice.com.
Next in our special series, Elements of Energy, why Indonesia believes nickel could pave the way to political and economic independence.
We were colonized for 350 years. In the next 70 years, we are just still producing commodities, which was the reason why we were colonized. Something has to change.
The promise of nickel in our series, Elements of Energy, that's on the next On Point.
Today at 11 on WJCT News 89.9.
After decades of exposure to cancer-causing chemicals from a rail yard next to their neighborhood, some residents of Houston's Fifth Ward are choosing to leave. And in this case, the city is footing the bill. Our local spotlight series highlights new reporting on Houston's effort to combat years of climate injustice. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Hey, it's Marielle Segarra, host of Life Kit. Spring can be a great time for cleaning and reorganizing after you finally put your winter clothes away. It's also a perfect time to take stock of what's important to you, like the news and podcasts you rely on from this station. Help keep them going by making a gift today. Here's how to donate, and thank you.
Please call 904-353-9528 or visit us at wjct.org/radio.
And we're back. I'm joined now by Yaya Cardona of Create Jax and her fashion-forward canine, Mambo. He's here in the bag. Hey, Mambo. Hey, Yaya.
Good morning. Buenos dias.
Buenos dias. Thank you for coming in. And thanks for bringing my little buddy.
Oh, of course. He loves coming here. He gets so excited as soon as I pull in the parking. He knows what we're going to do.
He's just so sweet. All right. Let's talk events this week. I want to start with one that is actually happening here tonight.
Yes, here tonight. I'm really excited. She's a Grammy-nominated jazz composer and harpist, Brandi Younger.
Yeah, Brandi Younger. This is going to be an incredible show here at the soundstage tonight.
Yeah, I'm excited. If you guys have not been to one of these soundstages performances, this is the one that I highly suggest you start. The doors open at 7 p.m. You can still purchase tickets. Local songwriter Jay Maestro will be opening the show with his band. So check it out. That starts at 7 p.m. tonight here at WJCT Soundstage.
Yeah, doors at 7. I think Jay Maestro takes the stage at 8, and then Brandi Younger will be starting up at 9. And there are tickets still available at WJCT.org/events. But guess what?
Yes, what?
We're going to be giving away a couple tickets.
I feel like Oprah.
Yeah.
You get tickets.
Yeah, so all you need to do is send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, put tickets in the subject header, and we will pick a winner. So
yes, let me know. I want to know who the winner is tonight so we can hang out. So check that out. I'll be here tonight. Brandi Younger performing tonight at WJCT Soundstage.
Good stuff. What else is cooking?
Else is going on. Let's start with Friends of Jacksonville's Public Library book sale. Mm-hmm. Are you a bookworm?
I am a worm. I'm definitely a lifelong worm.
I wish I was more. You know, Hooked on Phonics didn't really work too well for me, but you know, I love listening to the books.
Audiobooks?
I do
that.
Yeah.
All right.
I will listen to bookworms.
That counts.
Yeah. Friends of Jacksonville's Public Library are hosting a book sale today through Saturday at the University Park branch. They'll have deals on books, movies, audiobooks, records, jigsaw puzzles, and more. So make sure you check it out and bring your kids, okay?
This is like crazy deals too. If you've not been to one of the Jax Public Library's sales, like it's just an embarrassment of riches, and there's so much, and it's cheap, like really, you know, like dollars.
I'm interested really in the audiobooks, the records, and jigsaw puzzles because I love the jigsaw puzzles.
Well, let's check it out.
All right. What about St. Patrick's Day? Are you like into that holiday?
I mean, probably like my best St. Patrick's Day are behind me, to be quite honest.
For real, college days for sure.
Yeah, right.
But if you're looking to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, well, Springfield has an amazing event happening tomorrow, Friday. It's the Springfield St. Patrick's Day, SSQ Park from 5:30 to 8:30, and it's completely free. All right. So the Springfield community is hosting this event.
It's at Sesquicentennial Park. And my producer was like gonna bet me I couldn't say it. I can't.
Listen, it's one of those tongue twisters. We should make a game out of it. Like, especially since it's St. Patrick's Day, maybe we can make a game. Who can say it the fastest? Well, no, check that out. That's going to be at 5:30 to 8:30, completely free tomorrow. There'll be food trucks, drink tents. People can bring their own blankets and chairs and have like a mini picnic. There's going to be music. And this is a kid-friendly event. So come on out, dress in your best leprechaun outfit and make sure you wear green.
All right. Yeah, it should be a fun time. I mean, that's a beautiful space. And there's going to be pipes and drums. So like the whole shebang.
I'm surprised how many people have not been to Springfield in Jacksonville. Guys, I need you guys to leave your 20-mile radius from your home and check out all of the 904.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Dirkville. Dirkville is another neighborhood that people really don't know about.
Yeah, historic neighborhood, a lot of really cool history. That's where the ballpark is,
yes,
right? Yes. J.P. Smalls.
Yep, mm-hmm. I have a strong connection with baseball, so I'm really, really excited about this. So this is tomorrow, Dirkville mural unveiling of the Paschal Brothers Hardware is at 6 p.m. and it's free. And this is done by one of my closest friends. I call him my primo, Christopher Clark, and the local youth from the Performers Academy.
Oh, that's
They've
sweet.
Been working on this mural for some time, and they're finally doing the unveiling tomorrow at 6 p.m. Okay?
That is so great. I love the murals around, you know, they're popping up everywhere.
But it's
great that Dirkville is getting its own.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited that Dirkville is finally getting some love and attention. They have some, when you go out there, it's so friendly. I went out there on a tour for Explore Core Jacks with Yolanda, and the people from their houses were so friendly. They were waving at us, welcoming us in their neighborhood. So please make sure you check that out tomorrow, Friday. Also, March 16th, this is Saturday. So we're on Saturday. Bob Hayes in Invitational Track and Field Meet.
Yeah.
All right.
He's Bullet Bob Hayes, a legend and Olympian, 2 gold medal winner. And Jacksonville legend, really.
I don't understand how we don't have a movie on this man yet.
Or we do have a statue at the park.
I know, we
but
do.
Yeah, there should be a documentary.
There should be definitely a movie, a documentary, something on it. We need to get on that. But check that out. For all my runners, this is from 8:30 to 5 p.m., okay? This will be at the Hodges Stadium at UNF campus.
I think we've got time for just one more.
One more event? Okay, which one do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about Noah Gunderson, Intuition Aleworks. They've been doing such good music. They have really taken up the mantle of like indie rock.
Yep.
And he's going to be here. It's like an acoustic sound, very lyrically driven. And he's going to be touring in support of his latest record, If This Is the End. So indie folk fans out there, check it out.
So remember, you can check out the full list of events on createjacks.com, C-R-E, the number 8. Jax.com and his social pages. I do want to mention just one last thing for all my dancers. There's a dance tournament this Saturday. It's called Who Got the Juice? So check that out. And follow me on Instagram, Yaya Love Jax.
Yaya Love You. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you guys. Have a good weekend.
All right, that's our program. Join us again tomorrow. We'll be talking with our local news hounds about the biggest stories of the week. I'm Ann Schindler. You've been listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.